The following Frugal Yankee podcast is brought to you by the Museum of Bad Art, collecting, exhibiting, and celebrating art too bad to be ignored. Find out more about them at museumofbadart.org.
Back when I was a young man, a couple years back, I used to be involved with a lot of Main Street USA programs. These are programs designed to help Main Streets get back to where they used to be because they were being eroded business-wise, economically-wise, by what was known as big boxes, you know, Walmart and all those other kind of things. And it is something that both Louise and I as Frugal Yankees have, we kind of champion the small businesses and the local farmers.
Can see the conflict sometimes because, you know, if your perception is, boy, I can support local businesses or I can save 30% by going to the big box stores, it can feel like a tough choice.
It is a tough choice. Anyways, you're listening to The Frugal Yankee. My name is Garen Daly. I'm here with Louise Riley Sacco. And on the phone with us now is Stacy Mitchell. Stacy has written a book called Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Realtors and the Fight for America's Independent Business. And Stacy, thank you for joining The Frugal Yankee.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So why don't you give us a definition or your definition of what a big box is, besides that big thing that I get at Christmas and I open it up and there's all these goodies in there?
Well, a big box retailer is a large format, a large retail store, Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Lowe's. This book is not only about those kinds of retailers, but also about chains in general, you know, the Walgreens and the Starbucks. We have seen over the last 20 years or so chain retailers just grow tremendously in this country and displace a lot of independent businesses, and I think there's a real hidden cost to that.
Well, why have they been so successful?
Well, they have been expanding dramatically, and often these very large stores, you know, come into communities, and they have a lot of advantages at the outset. People get very interested in these new stores and going in, the perception of low prices, the choice, and that sort of thing. And independent businesses have, you know, struggled quite a bit in that sort of environment and have often gone by the wayside. But I think more and more people are beginning to realize that the deal that these stores, the big boxes, seem to be offering is not such a great bargain.
Yeah, I want to hold that economic part of it off for a little bit. And I want to talk a little bit about geography and landscape. And, I mean, I don't, you know, one of the things I've noticed about the big box and the way that it's grown in our country and our culture is that they take over former areas that were wild areas, build these huge big blocks, boxes, the town or the local government has to put in new traffic lights, new traffic patterns are going out, they seem to be getting further and further out. Am I right in that assumption, is that we are now driving further to get these good deals?
That's absolutely correct. We have seen a dramatic rise in the number of miles that the average American household drives for shopping in a given year. We've seen that grow tremendously since 1990. At about the same time the big boxes started proliferating, we see this run-up in the miles that we drive each year for shopping. Shopping-related driving is actually the fastest-growing segment of our driving. We're driving more for shopping, growing at a faster rate than any other reason that we're driving.
But, Stacy, is that attributable to the big boxes, or is it attributable to the fact that we have been so inculcated to become shoppers, that we have to shop all the time to feel happy?
It is actually pretty directly related to the big boxes, and I'll tell you why. One of the things, when I ran across that figure, the number of miles that we drive each year has grown about 40% shopping-related driving, I thought, well, maybe we're just spreading out in general, and we're all living further out, and we're just driving more for everything. But I looked, and shopping-related driving has grown three times as fast as driving for all other purposes. And I thought, well, are we going to the store more frequently? Are we shopping more often? And it turns out that's not the answer either. We take about as many trips to the store as we took 15 years ago.
You haven't met my wife.
Well, Stacy, I mean, what I've seen in the suburban town I live in is exactly that, because I can no longer buy a dress or a book in my town. You know, those stores are gone.
Exactly. That's what happened. Each of those trips is now a few miles longer than it used to be, because instead of having, say, lots of local hardware stores that are in every village center and every neighborhood in a bigger city, you now have one big box, and everybody from that whole region has to drive to that Home Depot or that Lowe's to get a gallon of paint. And so more and more miles on the road, and it's one of the hidden costs of these stores.
Well, let's also talk about the amount of space taken up by all these stores. I mean, you know, when you start thinking about Walmart, I mean, I don't even know how many stores they've got, but boy, they've got to be, you know, chucking up a lot of acreage that used to be full of farms and other uses.
That's very true. You know, many years ago, if you had a downtown department store that was, say, a 100,000 square foot store, that would take up, you know, say it was on two stories, that would take up about, you know, an acre of land plus maybe a little bit of area around it for the roads and the parking. Now that's something that's going to take up on the order of 12 acres because you have a vast single-story outlet and, you know, a parking lot that's usually about three or four times the size of the store. It's an incredibly inefficient use of land.
I'm Louise Riley Sacco. We are the Frugal Yankees. I'm here with Garen Daly, and we're talking to Stacy Mitchell, whose book is Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. Stacy, I'd like to be a little bit of a devil's advocate for a minute here.
Oh, this isn't anything new.
And couldn't you say that there's something going on here that's pure capitalism, that the big boxes have competed with the smaller independents and they've won? And, you know, that's what happens in capitalism, and it just says that they're offering consumers something better.
There are a couple of issues with that. I don't think what we're seeing is really quite a fair and free market. One reason is that government has really helped the big companies out. Companies like Walmart and Home Depot have gone around the country and asked for tax breaks and subsidies almost everywhere that they build, and they have gotten those deals, often millions and millions of dollars. And over the years, that money has really helped them expand and grow, and hasn't been available in that kind of money has not been available to independent retailers and downtowns. So there's that advantage. But the other thing that I think is going on, and the point that I try to make in the book, is that, you know, the price tag that you see on that merchandise at the big box store isn't the only price. That we as a society are paying a high cost for these stores, and that cost comes in many forms. It comes in declining number of job opportunities, declining wages. It comes in the high environmental cost of these stores. It comes in the loss of cultural diversity, the loss of a sense of community. There are all kinds of expenses that these stores are imposing, and they don't show up on the price tags. And so, in effect, we have a distorted market. And so, my request to people is to really look at the full cost and to think about whether these stores really are such a great deal.
You know, you mentioned in the book that one of the costs is the shrinking middle class, that these big boxes and this kind of consumerism has diminished the working class. Could you kind of elaborate on that for us?
Absolutely. One of the things I did in the book was to really trace what happens when a big box store comes into a community. What these stores have done is that they have eroded two key pillars of the American middle class. One are small business owners. We've lost tens of thousands of small businesses, often businesses that were able to support not only the owner but his or her family, that have now lost their livelihoods. And the other key pillar of the American middle class that's really been hurt by the growth of companies like Walmart and Target are manufacturing workers. We've lost about 3 million manufacturing jobs in this country since 1990, and many of those jobs, not all, but many of them can be traced to pressure that the big boxes are putting on manufacturers and saying, we're not going to carry your products unless you move overseas to a low-wage country. And most manufacturers have not been able to, you know, they've had to accept that reality and head overseas. In exchange for union wage manufacturing jobs, small business ownership, all that the big boxes have given us instead are very low-paid jobs working in their stores, often with inadequate or absent benefits altogether. And if you look statistically, what you have seen in this country is that, indeed, the share of the nation's income flowing to the middle class has been shrinking. The middle class is losing ground. And meanwhile, there are growing numbers of people who are working poor, who simply cannot make enough money to make ends meet at the jobs that they have. And, of course, a lot of those jobs are the Walmart jobs.
Well, it seems to me you're advocating that we try to shop locally and shop with the independent stores. I wonder if there are any parts of the country or any kinds of areas that are doing better with holding on to their small businesses.
There are. One of the most encouraging things that's going on right now, and I see more signs of sort of hope for a revival of independent businesses in the last few years than we've seen in a long time. One of the encouraging things that's going on is that there are now buy local campaigns, very effective campaigns going on in about 50 cities around the country, including a number here in New England. And these are campaigns where, you know, several hundred local business owners will get together and begin making a case to the community through, you know, marketing and events and, you know, in-store materials that there is a benefit to buying locally, and to think about when you need something, instead of immediately thinking of the big box, to think about whether there might be a local option for that product. And in cities where those campaigns have been going on for several years, we've now actually got, you know, real evidence that they're making, that they are having, they're influencing people's shopping choices, and that more and more people in those communities are choosing to buy local.
Stacey, I noticed a couple things in my research for this piece. The big boxes are realizing that there is a little pushback coming back from local communities and from people in general. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see Walmart doing its, you know, $4 generic drug. And also, you know, there's a new word out there that I hadn't heard about, and that's called greenwashing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely. Walmart has, you know, tried to figure out how to repair its image, and one of the things that it's hit on is this idea of trying to portray itself as an environmentally friendly company. It doesn't feel like, you know, apparently it thinks it's too costly to pay its workers a decent wage, so it's going to try to go another route to win back people's dollars. What it's doing now is trying to make a case that it's environmentally friendly. There's nothing particularly wrong with the kinds of initiatives that Walmart is undertaking. They're making some of their stores more energy efficient, for example, making some of their trucking fleet more energy efficient. But the problem is that stuff is really a drop in the bucket when you look at the impact that they have had on the environment in terms of things like the number of road miles that we drive, the land that they have consumed, the runoff coming off their parking lots is now one of the leading sources of water pollution in this country. When you look at the big picture, what Walmart is changing in terms of its environmental footprint is just tiny compared to its overall impact. And the reason, we have to remember that the reason that Walmart is doing these things is not because it really cares about the environment. It's a public relations initiative, and the goal really is to be able to expand more, and it wants to become, you know, have a better image, and so it can build more stores and have an even bigger impact, a negative impact on the environment. So I think we have to be very wary when we hear Walmart making those kinds of announcements.
Stacey, we don't have enough time to delve as deeply as we should into this topic, but would you tell our listeners how they can get your monthly email newsletter that will keep them up to date on some of these issues?
Yes, if you go to my organization's website, which is newrules.org, New Rules, where the New Rules Project is the name of it, and then click on the retail section, and you'll see an opportunity there to sign up for the Hometown Advantage Bulletin, which is, as you said, a monthly free email newsletter that highlights some of the encouraging things that communities are doing around the country to say no to big box development and rebuild their local economies.
We do have to end here, but I want to kind of make a statement, and I want you to respond to it before we say goodbye. I actually think there's something hopeful out there, and it's kind of a weird thing. It's because gas prices are going so high. With gas prices and energy prices going so high, the ability to ship in cheap goods from China is going to be diminished. In fact, I've been reading some reports that manufacturers are now taking their factories out of China and putting them back in the United States. Do you see that as being hopeful, or am I just a hopeless romantic?
that is something that's going to really change the dynamics. You know, the big box model is incredibly fossil fuel dependent because of that long distance shipping, because of the sprawl and the driving. And as the cost of oil rises, that model doesn't look like such a great economic deal anymore. And suddenly, you know, small-scale agriculture, local manufacturers, independent retailers, downtowns look like a very efficient and frugal method of producing and distributing goods. And it certainly makes the local economy much more competitive. So I think you're absolutely right. That's going to change the dynamics dramatically on this issue.
I'm glad there's hope on the horizon. Anyways, Stacy Mitchell, the author of Big Box Swindle, The True Cost of Mega Realtors, easy for me,
retailers.
Yeah, man, sometimes my mouth just is not working. The True Cost of Mega The Big Box Swindle by Stacy Mitchell. Stacy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find out more about us by going to www.frugalyankee.com. Enjoying life, spending less, that's the Frugal Yankee way.